They called it the Ship of Dreams, and that will inform the tone and mood of this film, even though it kind of goes against the thousands of people dying part of things. It was Titanic, and it was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hello, I'm Sean Collier. I'm here with reluctant time travelers Robin Hitchcock.
Hello.
And Camila Adams.
Hi.
Last time was Peabody and Sherman, 33 and two-thirds. We don't have time for that. It's Titanic episode,
yes!
Everyone. Yeah. The whole ship, the whole thing, 3 hours, millions of dollars.
Billions of dollars.
We'll get to it. I genuinely loved the process of returning to Titanic, as Bill Paxton puts it. But we're here for Robin. Robin, tell us why.
I won two bingos, so I got to pick a movie, and I knew in my heart it was Titanic. Come on. This is a show about box office champions. We got to talk about the champ of our youth.
Yeah, like 175 movies in and we hadn't hit Titanic yet.
Yeah, no, we that's the thing. It's random. We don't know. We have to cover Cheech and Chong's Nice Dreams. We can't do The Lion King because fate said it's Cheech and Chong time and not even the good one. Let's skip ahead a little bit to say I forgot that this movie is excellent.
Yeah. How did you feel watching it, Camila?
Not bad.
Ooh.
But also not like, it was just almost, I don't know, it's just kind of like, okay, because there's just a lot of things in there, like for example, like when Rose is like, this is my slave ship.
Yeah,
like,
I wrote that down.
Okay, Rose.
Colin immediately said, I can't wait to hear what Camila thinks about And I was like, you already know.
It's like, calm the fuck down. So it's just a lot of things. Like, it's been a long time since I've seen this all the way through. So, you know, just picking up on a lot of the language and a lot of the dialogue differently this time around. But, like, mostly just, like, how much they're just, like, in the dialogue and in people's discussions, like, how much is, like, hey, this ship is going to sink. Like, you know, all of this, like, oh, the unsinkable ship. Oh, there's no way. Oh, my God. Blah, blah, blah. That, all this stuff is like, we all know it's going to sink. But do we have to do this?
And no. Billy Zane gets the worst of it. Poor Billy Zane has to just take on the mantle of all of the hubris. I guess there's also that one other guy, but what? But he says unsinkable like 9 times.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
The moment where that's the most stark to me is when they go to church and they're singing some hymn with those in peril on the sea. It's like, there was one Sunday on this trip. You couldn't have picked any other song?
Anything else.
I think that they just sang that song on boats back then.
That's like there was a declared boat church song?
I have no evidence of this. I just think it's true.
I agree with you. It's a heavy-handed movie, to be sure.
Is there a single black person in this movie?
No.
Okay.
I thought maybe I sort of kind of saw one in Cargo or something like that. I don't know. But for the most part, you know what? It's fine.
Even if there were no... If they had zero black people on the Titanic, good for them. It sunk. But there's a whole modern frame story. Come on.
Yeah, true story. Yeah. But it's also, you know what? We don't...
Okay.
I'm not to say that we don't, but for the most part, it's like, why? Because you're not going to get my black ass on a cruise.
Again, the ocean, not for us. I was just saying. And Robin, as you know, it has 1912 diversity, by which I mean an Italian guy and an Irish guy.
Yes.
That's what you got at the
Fabrizio.
Time.
But when we do get to like the last hour of the dramatics, that shit is like, I was like, yeah, I remember. I remember this feeling.
Right?
It's intense.
I think for me, it's not that I didn't have problems with it, and not just that, like there's the whole second act, by the 90 minute second act, kind of I started to lose attention, like during their false, like, we're not lovers anymore. Like both of those felt, there's moments that feel thin, but the magic, just the filmmaking effort and the overall, like getting swept up in it of it is enough to really make me love seeing this, you know, every 10 years or so. I wouldn't watch this every 6 months. You know, it's not going to just go on.
I think I'm an every 5 years person, but I was also a 13-year-old girl in 1997. Right. So what do you want from me?
Right. Yeah.
We, I'm sure, have a lot to say, and just so you know, longest faxy segment ever in honor of the length of both the boat and the film.
I did think somewhere through the movie, like, wow, I really gave Sean a homework assignment.
Right, yeah.
Right before he goes on his honeymoon.
Hey, that's fine.
Show your dissertation.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, this is, usually I keep everything to one page. This time I kept everything to two pages, and that was like, there were 5,000 things I could have mentioned. I didn't. Like, there's so many facts about this process.
Camille and I are going to bring up stuff, and you're going to be like, I almost put that in.
Right.
Yeah. I'll stop saying that after the 17th time. But first, hey, what happens in Titanic? Here is Camilla Adams to try and tell you in 60 seconds or less. I mean, you could take 120 for, you know, obvious reasons.
Right,
but,
right.
And go.
This dude is looking through Titanic's wreckage for a big-ass diamond and finds a drawing of this chick wearing it instead. He goes on the news to find out who the girl is, and this old bird shows up like, yeah, that's me, I'm Rose. So she tells him her story. Unemployed artist Jack wins a seat on the Titanic in a poker game. Rose and her mom and rich-ass fiancé Cal are vacationing on the Titanic. The necklace was a gift to Rose from Cal. Rose hates her life and starts hanging with Jack to feel something. She's impressed by his little sketches and spitting in the wind. So Jack shoots his shot, and Rose is like, bet. She starts carrying on like she doesn't have a whole fiancé. Of course, Cal is pissed when he finds out, but what nobody knows is Cal is a powerful warlock. He channels all of his jealousy and rage to make a giant iceberg. The ship hits it, cracks in half, people flying left and right. They both end up in the ocean. Rose is on a wooden board while Jack floats alongside her. He freezes to death by the time help arrives. The other survivors all end up on another ship. Rose hides while Cal is looking for her and then realizes that the necklace is in her jacket that Cal put on her to keep warm. Back to the present, she's all, that's my story, don't know where that damn necklace is. But then in the middle of the night, the broad tosses the necklace in the ocean. Maybe one last fuck you to Cal?
60 seconds exactly.
That's... Congratulations. Thank also, you. I love your fan theory.
I mean, the alternate, we'll get to the alternate ending in the faxy segment. I really liked how little the frames, the amount of time we spent on the frame story is actually restrained.
Yeah.
Like there's 20 minutes at the top. We pop in three times and then get to it at the end. Like, they could have really made us slog through that a lot. And they were like, no, you're here for the old clothes in the boat.
Yeah. Like they really could have like worked it through of like, you know, a bunch of side stories between Rose and her granddaughter or, you know, whatever, like troubles that this guy was like, we could have got a whole ass backstory about the guy looking for it. Cause he's
Bill Paxton.
Know, yeah. Because he's, you know, his house is being foreclosed on or whatever. Like, you know, it could have been some weird thing, but yeah.
I do think that frame story works. One thing to note is that I did watch 1953's Titanic starring Clifton Webb and Barbara Stanwyck, and also most of, I fell asleep during it, but I rewatched A Night to Remember, which is from 1958, which is excellent. Neither of those have frame stories. And so it was really interesting to see like the narrative differences between the three. And I really do think the frame story helps this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It would not have nearly, if it's just like, these are these two people on this boat full of people who died versus there are stakes to what's going on right now.
Primary function for me is that both of those movies, the boat sinks and it ends. And it's like, fuck. Right? Like, so like having a survivor, especially an elderly survivor, gives you this like little bit of hope to feel less bad about how 1,200 people froze to death.
Yeah, and it's also, it's I mean, it's a testament, I guess, to the whole entire movie's storytelling and just the basic whole storytelling, because even though I know what's going to happen from history as well as seeing this movie, there still doesn't It still breaks your heart when it happens. And like, you still are like, well, maybe they'll pull through. You know, maybe it'll be okay. Just hold on a little longer, Jack. The guys are coming. And Rose, blow the fucking whistle. Yell louder.
For me, it's like, is it really going to sink? And I know, but I'm like, I don't know. It feels really big.
It seems unsinkable.
You hear that thing that they started saying a few years ago, that if they had just sailed straight into the iceberg, they would have been fine?
I literally was thinking about that when I was watching it this time.
If they had gone, whoa, shit, and sailed straight into it, it would have fucked up the front of the boat.
And then they just would have been there until somebody
flooded everything.
Right, and then everybody would have just been there until somebody came to help. The other ship came 4 hours. That was 4 hours.
Some people say it could have probably made it to New York.
Really? Just
more slowly.
Oh, wow.
Ooh, that hurts.
And because they tried to go around it and it opened the boat up, that's why. It's a shame. They really fucked up on that Titanic, didn't they?
Somebody was asleep at the wheel.
Yeah.
Titanic 1953 starts with the origin story of the iceberg.
Shut up.
What, it's just a fade up on the sea?
And it truly is. And then it's like, a big chunk of a glacier falls off and floats away. I am not kidding. It won the Oscar for best screenplay.
Wow.
That, I don't think that's on our list, but I might watch it anyway.
It's fine, but honestly, here's anyone listening. I do not recommend this movie for the sole reason that the first 15 minutes is boat horn, and then the last 15 minutes is we're sinking klaxons.
Jeez.
Yep. Handle it. I almost turned it off.
If you've seen a movie about the Titanic, it's this one, which was released on December 19th, 1997, the 35th and final number one movie of 1997. We just addressed it won its first weekend, $28.6 million. That was close-ish. James Bond in Tomorrow Never Dies was in second with $25.1 million, so it just kind of barely won that first weekend, both dethroning Scream 2, which we recently discussed.
Can I quickly pause the facts, because my memory, this was when I was 13, is that this was not expected to do that well.
Really?
It was an early, like... you know, just pre-internet or baby internet, like rumors of troubled production.
Well, because I know they delayed it.
Yes, it was originally a summer release. Right,
they delayed it to finish the effects. Mm-hmm. And also, this is like in the shadow of Kevin Costner's Waterworld, which like actually made money, but is remembered as a flop. Mm-hmm. And it was like, water movies don't work. And then there was also, and also like that was the most expensive movie of all time. And then it flopped air quotes.
Yeah.
And then this was the most expensive movie of all time. So it was like, and also I think it's just kind of like people were expecting like the poetry of the hubris of the Titanic and the hubris of Titanic's the movie.
Right.
But also I feel like people were saying at the time like, oh, disaster movies. So 1970s, right?
Yeah.
I thought this was not gonna work, and then boy did it.
It was mainly the money. It was mainly that there was this narrative that you spent $200 million, which is the most anybody has ever spent on a movie,
which is so quaint right now,
right? To make a 3 hour plus disaster movie, a genre that we don't really have right now,
right,
starring people who aren't famous. What? Why do you think this is going
to
hit?
Well, Leo was famous to me at the time.
Right. But he wasn't.
And honestly, I mean, that's the
thing. He wasn't bankable.
That's the thing. This movie became what it is on the back of 13-year-old girls like me.
That's true.
And we fucking knew who Leonardo DiCaprio was.
That's true.
We were watching Basketball Diaries every goddamn sleepover.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Such a good one.
But there was all. It was industry spike. A part of that is that Paramount had to, like, go to Fox and ask them to split the cost.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Paramount invested some money, and then James Cameron was like, I need all the more money that you possibly can. And they were like, maybe Fox will give you money. And one distributed globally and the other domestically. So it was this money pit that industry people were like, oh, that's never going to work. It turned around as soon as anybody saw it.
Right.
As soon as, and they did some test screenings and nudged it a little bit, but as soon as people started to started to see the finished product, then it turned into, this is going to be a big deal.
Okay, good.
Which still wasn't enough to, like, have it hit the minute it opened. It was a little bit of a slow-ish climb, but we're through one fact. I got a lot of them.
Sorry.
That first weekend, then it hung around. It climbed in its second weekend to $35.4 million. That's probably its biggest weekend. And then it made at least $20 million every weekend for at least 10 weekends. Oof. Its top grossing day wasn't until Valentine's Day.
Oh, that's so cute.
A Saturday. It made $13 million on Valentine's Day. That was its 58th day in theaters. Stayed at number one until April 3rd. Again, released December 19th. Number one through April 3rd.
I know this one.
When it was finally sent to second place by...
Lost in Space.
Lost in Space.
Wow.
$20.1 million. $10 million more than Titanic made that weekend. If you count the holiday Monday, it came back and won Easter weekend. Just hanging around. Stayed in the top 10 for 26 weeks. In theaters for 41. They had to send replacement film reels to theaters.
They were wearing out.
They just wore out the prints.
Wow.
That's how long it... And that... You have to show a movie hundreds of times for that to happen.
Our jaws are dropped in the studio.
Ended its initial domestic run with just over $600 million with inflation. That'd be like a movie released today making $1.2 billion in America only.
Wow.
So, by the way, that's somehow second all time in number of weekends spent at number one.
Really?
Behind E.T.
Oh.
16 to 15 was one away.
Prior episode subject with our theme songstress, Addie Twigg.
Mm-hmm.
We do not shout out often enough.
That's true. It has had several re-releases since then, most notably the 3D version came out in 2012.
No thanks.
I would have seen that if they had it in South Africa.
I think I have had a mind too, but I also really hated 3D by that point.
I'm okay. I am weirdly okay with 3D. I know I'm wrong, but I'm okay with it.
The only one of those I really did was Jurassic Park, because I love Jurassic Park so much that any new you could be like Jurassic Park's playing at the gas station on the thing. And I'd be like, oh, see the gas station Jurassic Park. But the re-release of Titanic debuted in third, earned another $57 million, making it the top grossing re-release of all time. A 25th anniversary got another $15 million, all told about $674 million domestic. That is ninth all time. But I will put that in further context. The global gross across all releases is $2.2 billion. That is not adjusted. It has made $2.2 billion around the world. In ticket sales alone, fourth all time globally behind both Avatars and Avengers Endgame. And we'll get back to Avatar. It's also the first movie that ever made $1 billion.
Oh, wow.
So look at tickets sold, which we don't ordinarily do, but it's very relevant here. That is inflation proof. It doesn't matter what the tickets cost. How many did it sell? Titanic has sold the fifth most tickets of all time. Number one is Gone with the Wind, 202 million tickets. Star Wars, across all its releases, is second, 178 million, some of which were this same year, because Star Wars Special Edition came out in early 97. The Sound of Music is third, E.T. is fourth, Titanic is fifth. Titanic has sold 135 million tickets. It is relevant that it's the only film from the last 40 years in the top 10.
Yeah.
E.T. is the recent one. Other than that, nothing in our lifetimes has sold that many tickets.
And since E.T., we've had home video, right? So Gone with the Wind, you couldn't watch until it came out again. And then you're like, I like Gone with the Wind. I'll go see it, right? So this means something.
Here's the succession, the order of top grossing movies ever.
Okay.
Since there were movies. Birth of a Nation.
Gross.
Gone with the Wind.
Grossish.
Which is probably the longest reigning, because it was Gone with the Wind until The Sound of Music. The Godfather, Jaws, E.T., Jurassic Park. Titanic.
Okay.
Avatar and probably Force Awakens now. There's some weirdness over whether it's Force Awakens or Avengers Endgame, but
it depends on domestic versus international, is my understanding.
The Avatar thing, I mean, to me, the most mind-blowing thing about all of this is that James Cameron made the biggest movie ever, went away for 12 years, and then took that record from himself. It's like, I show up to make the biggest movie ever, period.
Right.
That's all I do now.
I mean, good for him.
Yeah.
Is the thing? Like, I don't think Avatar is a great piece of art.
I do not either, and I don't understand how.
To me, Avatar is like going to a theme park.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, like.
And then there's a second one, right?
Which I honestly think is a better movie.
Maybe.
Okay. I still think it's like going to a theme park more than going to the movies.
I mean, that nearly, those two are both above Titanic in the global.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, Avatar the Way of Water is all, and isn't that, is the third one this year?
I think so.
Yeah.
Fire people.
Oh, they're bringing the fire. We got the tree people and the water people. Where can we go?
Time for some fire people.
I've seen both Avatars twice because you go in the theater and you go, that was quite an experience. And then you go again and then gone forever. Like, I can't tell you
about it.
I remember Kate Winslet hissing, like, because they're cat water people, which is an oxymoron, but they are.
Yeah.
And I remember Sprink the whale. Sprink is my cat that doesn't have a tail. The whale is missing a fin. Sprink
that's
the whale.
That's why. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Still, good job, James. It's what a life.
He really, like, that's the thing about watching this movie. I just kept being like, he knows how to spend money.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he really knows where to put that money to, like, that one shot of the engines reversing.
Yeah.
That's like 10 seconds of the movie. That must have cost so much money. Those are actual things. Like, that's not CGI.
Right.
And it is so effective. Well, it really gives you this sense of the stakes of what's happening.
Well, and you look at some of these, like, a lot of the movies that spend more than that are the opposite of that in terms of where to inflate. This isn't even on the list. We're into extraneous facts. Titanic is the 9th most expensive movie ever, if you adjust for inflation. But some of the ones that the second most expensive movie ever made is Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom.
No.
Really?
The one that they're, like, the haunted house one?
The haunted house one?
Are you kidding me? I mean, I kind of like that movie.
I did not. There are two latter Pirates of the Caribbeans that were more expensive adjusted than Titanic. Avengers Age of Ultron, like the one Avengers you can totally skip.
Yeah.
These are examples of how to not spend money. And Titanic, it's like, good choice.
I mean, some of it is
way to build that tank.
Right. The Avengers movies have to give $20 million plus to
17 people.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And do you know how much they paid Leo and Kate? It's probably
pennies.
I'm sure they're completely happy that they were in this movie, but I doubt they got paid a lot.
Upfront salary was $2.5 million.
Oh, really?
And he had a back-end deal. So
for Leo or for Kate?
For Leo.
Okay.
He probably made $40 million.
That is shocking to me. I mean,
at that stage,
I knew who he was.
Right.
I had his face on my wall.
I don't know when Titanic started production, but like, since,
right.
Like Romeo and Juliet. That was
right.
Like
that was
before.
Yeah.
Oh, she got screwed. She did make $2 million, but did not have a back-end deal.
Oh, shame.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, we'll get to her too.
Okay.
Expensive baubles.
Expensive baubles.
All right. Okay. I think I can do it. Okay. So it's 14 nominations.
14 nominations.
Which tied with All About Eve.
That tied All About Eve for the most nominations ever record. It has since been matched by La La Land.
Yes.
Also has 14
then,
nominations. I like La La Land.
So do I. It's nowhere near as good as this, or All About Eve, let's be real.
Yes. Right.
And then it won 11, which is tied with Ben-Hur, and then was tied again by Return of the King.
Yes.
All right, and I know the three it lost.
Those are?
Best Actress, Kate Winslet, lost to Helen Hunt for As Good As It Gets.
Mm-hmm.
Gloria Stewart lost to Kim Basinger for L.A. Confidential.
Mm-hmm.
And it lost makeup to Men in Black?
To former episode subject, Men in Black.
Okay, so the other 11 that it won.
Yes.
Are Best Picture, Best Director, Best Editing, Best Cinematography, Sound X2.
Yes.
Visual Effects, Score, Song, Production Design, and what am I missing?
I don't think it's Production Design because I don't.
Art Direction?
Art Direction.
Sorry, that's the same thing. And Costumes.
Yes.
Obviously Costumes. Oh my God, that fucking hat.
Oh yeah.
I know that that's the thing, that every single thing in this movie is from some drawing or some picture, and it's but then you're like, the color on that fourth person in the background is amazing. Yeah. It's every single thing anyone wears or touches.
And I remember at the time there were some people being like, actually, there are some historical inaccuracies. A woman would never be outside not wearing a hat. And I'm like, fuck you. This looks so good.
Also, she's a rebel, okay? Right. She doesn't play by your rules.
I think that's literally what James Cameron said. I think that was how he shut that down.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Good. He's good at shutting things down. He just really should have spoken up about the ship that squished those billionaires. But hey, that's another. That was weird in retrospect, watching that this time.
I'm like, great. This movie made some billionaires and it took some billionaires.
And what was it? Were you thinking of that at the beginning where Bill Paxton was like, we might get squished?
Of course I was. Yeah.
It's like, oh, that didn't age well.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have a lot of sympathy for a company that built a shoddy submarine and then squished a billionaire with it. It is weird to think about. Mm. Oh, by the way, because we did the Oscar records, shout out to Bernard Hill, who may or may not still be alive, who plays the captain.
He is dead.
He is dead.
Yes.
My vote for most interesting secondary character in the film.
Mine is Victor Garber Mr. Andrews, the guy who designed the ship.
Oh, yeah, he was pretty good, too.
Wait, who is the captain again?
Bernard Hill. Bernard.
He's famous for a crying gif that I don't know what it is from.
He is also in Lord of the Rings, Return of the King. So he is in two of the three most Oscar-winning movies of all time.
Okay. I also got to say, that guy needs some purple shampoo for his beard.
Hmm.
I really liked the
that
guy.
Yellowing of your white hair. Sean, you should know this.
I think that's historically accurate because that's from tobacco. That's from smoking.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Get some purple shampoo, buddy. Okay.
I think my favorite secondary character would be the guy who Billy Zane tries to make the deal with.
Mm.
Oh.
And who eventually, I think he strips himself in the head.
Yeah. He does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The looks that he gives, like the one guy who bails out and he's just like, I see you. See you.
And none of us are naming David Warner, our recent mascot. He of Scream 2 and
Tony,
Star Trek.
You're falling behind.
I really like that character for being like
a slime ball.
He's a dirt dude.
I'm evil. It's my job. I don't feel any particular way. I don't hate you. I don't like him. My job's just to be here being evil. What?
Right.
I do believe this ship will sink.
Yeah. One of the good cuts, there was a little plotline cut where Cal paid him as the ship was sinking, like, go back in there and get the necklace. After he's like, I put the coat on her. He gave him all the money or whatever.
Way better.
And that's why when we see him before he falls into the ship crack, that's why his face is all messed up, because he goes back and has a fight scene with Leo. Oh. And Leo finally fucks him up.
Huh.
I kind of missed the fight scene, but that would have been dumb.
Yeah, we didn't need it at that point in the thing. Hey, I have more records. Fifth highest grossing home video of all time.
Owned it.
Estimated to have made an additional $655 million in video sales alone. That is beaten only by The Lion King, Finding Nemo, Aladdin, and Sam Raimi's Spider-Man. The soundtrack was the global best-selling album of 1998, the fourth best-selling soundtrack ever, behind only Bodyguard, Saturday Night Fever.
I guess thanks, Celine.
Dirty Dancing. Certainly. It's notable that Cameron originally wanted none of what he got. He offered the composing job to Enya. He wanted Enya.
What? Okay, well then he kind of got the general vibes. Right. I think he told James Horner, give me Enya, and James Horner was like, got it.
He went to James Horner after Enya passed. I know you already own a castle, but come on, Enya. Horner recorded My Heart Will Go On with Celine Dion in secret because Cameron was like, no pop songs. I don't want a song over the credits. I don't want anything. It'll ruin it. Horner went, I think we can come up with.
Did he work the theme? Because like it's throughout. So
and he worked the theme that already existed into the pop song.
Good move.
Played it for James Cameron, who didn't really know who Celine Dion was.
Okay. Stop it.
He said, well, I have this in Celine. She's big, right? The quote was, she's big, right?
She is.
And it was close enough that James Cameron relented, but only for the credits. I forgot that is just a credit song. Like the most slam dunk best original song winner of all time is a credit song, which they're supposed to not like.
Yeah, surprisingly common, actually.
Mm. But I kind of expected to, this time around watching it, I expected to like hear it before the credits. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you hear it thematically.
Yeah.
You just don't hear the lyrics. Do you remember They used to play that song on the radio with clips of the movie put in it. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah. They also did it with Secret Garden from Jerry Maguire, which is way smaller of a movie and way smaller of a song, but that's the first one I can remember with that.
The song Streets of Philadelphia 2 by Bruce Springsteen.
Okay, please don't insult Bruce Springsteen while I'm on a New Jersey high. Because of Cory Booker.
I love Bruce more than anybody.
Okay.
Present company excluded.
More than anybody not born in the Garden State, maybe.
Not even more than anyone in this room, apparently.
I've seen Bruce Springsteen on two continents.
I saw him twice last year.
All right, okay. I don't go to concerts anymore.
My Heart Will Go On is the 10th best-selling single of all time.
Wow.
Here's a smattering of alternate casting, because we do this sometimes. This. Cameron was working on this for a while, as you know. So his first choice for Jack was River Phoenix.
Aww.
Yeah.
He would have worked.
Tom Cruise was interested. But
Jack?
Yeah.
Cow.
Cute. Yes, right. He
asked for too much money. Cameron wanted Jared Leto to audition.
Jack.
Yeah.
Could have worked. I mean, I don't like that guy, but could have worked.
At the time,
Leto as hell.
Leto refused to audition. Just didn't wanted none of it.
He didn't want to be a part of it, or he was just like, I'm too good to audition.
No, he had no interest in the project.
Okay.
He's too good to audition. Right. Maybe win an Oscar before Leo.
The closest one was Jeremy Sisto. Jeremy Sisto.
Turn away.
Did
turn
screen test.
Turn away.
Kate Winslet had.
I am contractually obligated to say that anytime Jeremy Sisto's name is.
I love that.
Well done.
Kate Winslet. You're one of my best friends.
She was hounding James Cameron. She was literally like calling him every day and writing him letters like, I'm Rose. I should really be Rose. There's no one better in the world for me. And he was not really on board and just kind of relented. And like
Academy Award nominee Kate Winslet. He was like, I'm too good for you.
He just didn't see it. Okay. He just didn't quite see it.
Well, was it because she was air quotes fat?
Right. Yeah, that's it.
I don't think so. I think that she just was, for her, they were thinking of bigger names. The competition was like Gwyneth Paltrow, Winona Ryder, Claire Danes, Reese Witherspoon. I think
none of those people were super famous yet, except for Claire Danes.
Winona Ryder was super famous.
Oh, sorry. Yet. I missed Winona Ryder. I was fixated on Gwyneth Paltrow, and I'm like, come on.
It all worked out.
The whole Kate Winslet is fat thing, the younger generation doesn't know about this. I found out recently on Blue Sky.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, Jude Doyle was posting about people making fun of Kate Winslet for her weight at the time, and a bunch of replies were like, Kate Winslet in Titanic?
Right, because she's like, what, maybe a size 8?
Right, right. And, yeah, and I remember replying, like, yeah, the joke was, I know why the boat sank.
Yeah.
Right? And the youth, there are so many things that are worse now that it is nice to remember the few things that are better.
Yeah, and I do remember appreciating Kate's size.
Me too.
When the movie was out.
I was like, she's got tits.
Right, yeah, look at that. Look at her with the hips.
Right.
There was so much more nudity in my memory.
I thought you saw Bush.
I didn't think you saw Bush, but in my mind there was like long, full topless and like full butt, and there might only be one of two boobs in this movie.
I think there's two. There's half a butt, and I think you get both boobs.
Half is generous, but in my brain wrote a lot more into it.
To me, the most important butt part is that part, the top part. How are we feeling about that?
I don't think that's the most important.
The butt décolletage.
If I get to choose,
you can see that on the street. That's not
okay. All right. If I get to choose, I want to see top half.
Really?
Of a butt. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I've never been a butt gal.
How did we get on?
Not like them.
The casting.
I didn't think I was a butt gal till I met Colin. What can I say?
Great job, Colin. Yes. The role of Cal was offered to Matthew McConaughey. Who turned it down?
Would have worked.
Would have. Well, I mean, also I think we did better.
Let me tell you something, Rose. I am your fiance.
Cal, a Pittsburgh Steel tycoon, by the way.
I pointed at the TV like Leo.
Completely. I never clocked that. Right. Or also, maybe I did when I was a kid. But
Caledon means Scotland. Yeah.
So he's Carnegie coded.
Correct.
How about that? What else? There was a competition for Old Rose.
Really?
James Cameron didn't want Gloria Stewart. He wanted Faye Ray.
Oh, my. I didn't know Faye Ray was still alive
Faye
then.
Faye Ray was alive and
she
kicking.
She lived for a while after that, didn't
yeah,
she?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she didn't think she was up to a okay. big film project where Gloria Stewart did. Gloria Stewart was a mere, what, 80, 81 at the time of
they
filming.
They had to do age makeup on her. That's yeah. why it got really? A makeup nomination.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes, those liver spots are fake.
She did not have a good time. But although she lived long enough to look like, she did live to 100,
good
but
for
that
her.
Was 18 years later. And the part of Molly Brown was turned down by Reba McEntire, who could not fit it into her touring schedule.
You know, Kathy Bates is so good in this
She's
movie.
So yeah. good. She tells the plot of The Unsinkable Molly Brown, right? The thing with the fire in the,
at the dinner table.
I do have to say, this movie kind of does not do well by Molly Brown because she does not successfully get the boat back.
A cutscene.
Oh, okay.
Filmed and didn't make
all right.
the cut.
Yeah, it's too bad.
I promise I'm almost done. This is fun. Someone drugged the cast and crew with PCP.
What?
When they were filming early on, early on in Nova Scotia, they're off somewhere. Somebody's making a big pot of clam chowder for the night.
I thought this was filmed in Mexico.
Some stuff was done. Okay. Some of the modern stuff. The modern stuff was done.
Oh, okay.
You know, in off in the Atlantic.
I thought Baja Studios was where this all of the water stuff.
They
happened.
Did some location stuff okay. in Nova Scotia. Somebody, presumably a fired crew member, nobody knows for sure, dumped a bunch of PCP in the communal clam chowder. 50 people went to the hospital. Everyone is just losing their shit because some of them are sick, some of them are tripping, people are crawling around the... The woman walked up to James Cameron and was talking to him on the walkie-talkie from 2 feet away because she didn't... And then when he pointed that out, she stabbed him with a pen.
What's that dance movie? The dance movie where they all get drugged and then start murdering each other?
Oh, Climax.
Climax.
It sounds like it was kind of like
I
that.
I would watch the Climax version of Titanic.
James Cameron didn't get the worst of it. He successfully induced vomiting in himself before it really not really kicked in. Gloria Stewart did not have the clam chowder.
Thank God.
And the person who dealt with it the best at the time was Bill Paxton,
of course.
Who got to the hospital and everyone's freaking out and he's like, I don't need to be. I'm going to go back to the set and drink a case of beer until I pass out.
Like, or, I'm okay.
No way. That was his first time doing PCP.
He said he didn't feel right for 2 weeks. Like it did mess him up. But on the day he was like, all right, I can get through.
That's a really fucked up thing to do. Yeah. Fired crew member.
Yeah. There was a big investigation. Police Good. Did not, catch the culprit.
Yeah, don't do that.
That's fucked up.
Just a
form a union.
A few fun facts. I know we're really going. One, James Cameron has spent more time on the Titanic than its passengers did from taking his little submarines down. He has spent more time in his little boats down there than the length of time before it sank.
Okay.
the final remaining Titanic survivor at the time, Milvina Dean, was invited to attend the premiere of the film, and she refused, having had a rough time watching A Night to Remember 40 years
well,
before.
Well, no yeah. shit. Like, a little PTSD. Like, yeah. I couldn't imagine.
I mean, I bet A Night to Remember in 1958 was maybe a little bit more raw than
right,
97
right.
would have been, but I get it.
She yeah. wasn't trying to. Yeah. She wasn't going to chance it.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
You know what?
Especially
I have made it this far in my life.
Right, at that age.
Like, I'm not going to be taken out by a film screening mm-hmm. by a heart attack.
I do really want to sincerely recommend A Night to Remember if you enjoy Titanic, because first of all, you'll be like, I remember this scene.
Yeah, like, apparently he borrowed
yeah,
a few things.
I do think some of it is probably adapted from the historical record,
sure.
so to speak, but it has a little bit more of like a documentary tone. It kind of reminds me of like Shin Godzilla, where it's kind of like, what did they do when this happened? Right? More so than getting into like the personal stories. Those are still there, but it's really a really great movie.
Probably just a happy accident, or was it the combined total of the running time of all of the scenes in the past? So just the scenes in the past is 2 hours and 40 minutes, the exact amount of time it took the Titanic to sink.
That is kind of cool.
Wow, that really puts it in perspective and
yeah.
it hurts.
Yeah.
When they say this is going to sink in an hour mm-hmm. and you realize there's about an hour left of the movie,
yeah.
that is like a like, oh God.
Yeah. Well, and what you never want to think about is like, picture the amount of time between someone saying to you,
you're about to die,
but make it pedestrian. Picture someone coming up to you and saying, hey, we got to go to the store. I forgot a thing. We have to go to Giant Eagle right now. Mm. The amount of time it takes you to like put your clothes on, get your shit together, get in the car, get over there. Imagine that, but this ship is sinking and there's 3,000 people and not all of them can get off. Just the like, no, we have an hour.
Yeah.
You know, just for you to like get from, it seems like, why couldn't they? Because that's impossible to do. Right. It's impossible. Right. The thing about, I got stuck on the thing about the lifeboats being sent out half full.
Yeah.
Which that's
terrible.
It's terrible. A lot of that, especially the ones that were really empty, when they're like, there's only 17 people, there's only 24 people on this lifeboat, was because they ran out of people to put on the lifeboat.
Right.
Because some people hadn't made it to the deck yet. A lot of the people who did were like, eh, it's not going to sink, and went back.
Yeah.
So they would get everyone who was, and there was one, it was different on each side of the ship. One guy understood that it's women and children first. Like, if there's 40 people standing around, put all the women and children, and then if when there's no one left, else,
right,
put them in.
That's how I would have approached it.
The guy on the other side the guy on the other side of the boat thought it was women and children only. So he was like, "Well, shit, there's no one left but these five guys. Send the boat off." And so a lot of that was just like, no, they had to get the boats out to make room for the other boats that had to get out.
Do you happen to know how much the unsinkable business is real?
Hmm?
Like, I know there weren't enough lifeboats.
Right.
There weren't enough lifeboats. But, like, did they really truly believe in their hearts that they didn't need to do, like, evacuation drills, for example?
I'm sure they did. I'm sure hubris played a lot into it all. Like, possibly the only person as the ship's designer was like, I think we probably could. And they're like, ah, never mind.
Right.
Well, I don't know how many people called it unsinkable and how frequently people are like, look at this unsinkable boat we're on. Nothing will ever happen to this one. What I did find, which was interesting, was at the time, no one thought the lifeboats are to get all the people off the boat.
Oh.
It was thought the purpose of lifeboats were to ferry people back and forth to the other boat that came to rescue
that
you.
That actually kind of makes sense to me.
So no big boats had enough lifeboats for every person on board. Because it was because
it
generally
takes a long time to sink an enormous ship unless you do what they did.
That's so that you can get people back and forth. They're meant to be making rounds.
I see.
So that wasn't, yes, they did like remove there could have been more,
right,
but it would have been weird if they had put more on. It was
that
not
makes sense.
Yeah,
and it's sad.
The whole thing is a shame.
Yeah.
Finally in my list, let's talk about the alternate ending. Did we all watch the I'm gonna describe
have you seen that before?
No.
Okay.
I had seen it.
All right. I was like, I don't know if this is going to be in Sean's Faxy segment, but I need to make sure that everyone knows what this is before we talk about it. And I might cut in some of it. We'll see.
That's what I was going to say. I'm going to describe it for the people at home. Feel free to drop some. So we're there. Paxton and the crew catch Rose on the railing and think she's going to jump.
Emma, please don't
come any closer.
Which...
Why?
Weird,
why would you think that?
Weird notion.
I mean, obviously, I would have thought that she was just going to fall. Like, I would have been afraid of her falling.
I mean,
your frail ass could get to her.
Right.
Stone off
right.
They clearly think that she's like, she's come back here to throw her 101-year-old self into the... Weird. She shows them the heart of the ocean, threatens to drop it.
I'll drop it.
Explains that she never sold it because she wanted to make it without Cal's help.
Every time I thought about selling it, I thought of Cal, and somehow I made it without his help.
Holy shit.
I do like that.
Yeah.
Paxton begs her to reconsider.
Please, think about this for a second.
Rose explains that she came here, the whole reason she's here is to put the necklace back where it belongs.
Oh, I've thought about this for years, and I've come all the way here to put it back where it belongs.
No.
She lets Paxton hold it for a minute.
Wait, just let me hold it in my hand, please.
But tells him that he looks for treasure in the wrong places.
You look for treasure in the wrong place, Mr. Lovett.
Only life is priceless, you fucking greeting card. He gives it back. She goes, whoop, and tosses it over her shoulder. Little scamp.
I hate it.
The loud crew guy yells, that really sucked, lady.
And I agree.
He's not great.
I agree. It makes no sense. Like, I get it. Kudos to you for making it on your own without Cal's help. Great. I did it. Here you go, granddaughter.
Give it to sell it and use the money for something. Right. You're 100. You made it.
As a child, a 13-year-old, I was like, oh, she didn't sell it because she couldn't fence it. Like, I don't even know if I knew the word fence yet, but I was just kind of like, what is a woman on her own go with this enormous diamond, right? And
I have no name, no history, and the most valuable thing in the world.
Correct. Right. Like, I just accepted that she was like, there's no way I can convert this into money, and so I will hold on to it. That made sense to me at the time. Does not mesh with this.
Paxton and Rose laugh. Paxton asks Rose's daughter to dance.
That's the most ridiculous.
There's no music playing.
Would you like to dance?
Why would you dance?
I will say the
like understated, they're flirting with each other, to me has always just been James Cameron falling in love with Susie Amos, even though he was married at the time.
Never stopped.
That's why I think he was like, I just want to watch this woman flirt with someone and pretend she's flirting with me. But it is so unnecessary.
And Rose, not one to pack light ever, huh?
I know!
At least they tied that back. She's at least saying, I need my pictures when I travel. And it's like, goldfish. You sure do. Plus two because she took her chihuahua onto the boat. But other than that... I might as well knock this stuff out. The trailer? Are you going to put the... You gotta.
The trailer's 4 minutes long.
Yeah, I guess.
I'll put in some of it.
Seeing her coming out of the darkness like a ghost ship still gets me every time.
Take a look at this drawing that we found just today. A piece of paper that's been underwater for 85 years.
I'll be damned.
All right, you have my attention. Can you tell us who the woman in the picture is?
Oh, yes. The woman in the picture is me.
Ready to go back to Titanic?
I'm the king of the world! Iceberg, what ahead!
Don't you understand? The water is freezing and there aren't enough boats. Half the people on the ship are going to die.
Not the better half.
What are we doing?
When I finish putting first-class people on the boats, they'll be starting with us.
We have to stay on the ship as long as possible.
Oh God! What a good trailer, though.
Yes, is the thing.
It's like a full summary of the movie without feeling like I've seen the whole thing.
Yes, it's just, because it's so long.
Right.
But no, I do think that this trailer really does sell both, like, you might actually care about this romance, and fuck yeah, we spent a lot of money making some really good spectacle.
The beginning of my family being really into Titanic, which was mainly my younger brother, who was 9 at the time, was when we first saw the trailer, we got really excited, and iceberg right ahead just became a catchphrase in the house.
I love that.
Based on, because that's kind of the turning point of the trailer, is that guy.
Iceberg straight ahead.
Just real
and
quick,
that's
sorry to interrupt.
Not the one in the movie. That was our big reaction when we saw it as a family, was like, they used a different take of iceberg right ahead?
I have the one from the trailer, like, burned into my brain.
Yeah.
Yes, I do want to quickly say that in A Night to Remember, they say iceberg dead ahead, and in Titanic 1953, they say iceberg straight ahead.
Mm.
I think right ahead is actually probably most accurate based on my understanding of British English.
And the letterbox list is, I have never cried so hard in my fucking life.
What else is on there?
Includes Iron Claw, Before Sunset, Call Me By Your Name, The Sound of Metal. Sound of Metal is a stretch.
Sound of Metal.
After
Before
Sun,
Sunset,
Little Women.
Before Sunset.
Some is people this, just have
this
feelings.
Person 12?
Okay. Maybe. Who knows?
I was 12 when I saw Before Sunrise.
So, how about that Titanic? That was a lot of facts. I'm
Thank you for those facts, Sean. Thank you.
Yes, that was a lot. I was... One of the things that one of the questions I had is like, how do you break up with somebody while you're on a ship? Like, where are you going to go, Rose? What do you think you're doing? What's happening right now?
Steerage. She's going to steerage. She's going to go on point, impress the boys, drink some. When she's drinking that red beer, I was like, God damn it, I want a red beer.
It looks refreshing.
Yes.
She loves it down there. And that is... That is very accurate. I can report. These are my people. This is how they live. The sound, the attitude, the like, we're all kind of on the verge of fighting at all time, but also all love each other. And when one of the first things I heard in Ireland when I went there was this song.
Oh, really?
Because I went into like the first bar you see when if you take
as
the bus
you do.
from the airport to the middle of Dublin, and there was a band playing that they're like, we exist to play Danny Boy and Molly Malone and every Irish song people who are not from here goes. And at the third or fourth song they play, we're like, well, if you saw a movie called Titanic, they went below the boat and they played music like this and just went. And I was like, okay, this
is. So wait, that band exists and tours.
It did at the time. I don't know if they're still around.
I was talking about this recently and somebody was like, yeah, they still tour. They're called like Gaelic Storm, I want to say.
Oh, are they? Is that Gaelic Storm?
That's my understanding. How about that?
Huh. Good for them.
I'll cut that if it's not true.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been wildly confusing to me as to why Victor Newman is on the ship.
Who's Victor Newman?
Eric Braeden. He plays like.
He's one of the rich people.
Richest men in the richest
oh,
man.
John Jacob Astor, who did die.
The mm-hmm. fourth.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who is he?
Eric Braeden, who plays Victor Newman on Young and the Restless. Who's played Victor Newman for like 75 years or whatever. And I'm pretty sure like prior to he did Westerns. I don't think since he got on Young and the Restless has he played anything else other than John Jacob Astor. Like, right. Like, I get it. Like, you know, whatever. but it's for someone like that.
Yes.
To put him in this movie.
Yes.
What?
It was so, because my mom was a Young and the Restless, probably still is for all I know. So we knew his face, but from the soaps.
Right.
It would be like if there were a wrestler in the Titanic. Like, you went to the soap opera guy? What? How did he get here?
Richest man on the Titanic.
Who did die.
Who yes. did die.
The of the real people, most of them died except for Molly Brown and the guy, the snivelly guy. The guy who jumped on the boat.
Yeah.
And the,
oh, shame.
Yeah. That guy survived. And it was like the nation hated him.
Did anybody go to jail over this?
No.
Okay. Did anybody get sued or anything?
I think the White Star Line paid a lot of people.
Okay.
A lot
that's
of money,
sort of what I was thinking.
Yeah.
I don't think, like, could there have been anybody that had gone
negligence
to jail?
Negligence, if they, I mean, I guess.
Does that exist then? Negligence.
You know what? I don't know.
It's a lot closer to the Wild West than it is to. There were congressional hearings and there were parliamentary hearings, but they both kind of found the combination of factors.
Yeah,
blah, blah,
I mean,
blah.
Honestly, like, one thing they mentioned in 1953 is they didn't have enough binoculars.
Mm.
And I just was like, I'm kind of glad they didn't include that in the Titanic movie of my heart.
Where are all the binoculars?
Right, because it's just sort of like, at what point does this start feeling like a torts problem?
Yeah.
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 So does anybody else, the grand ballroom staircase, does that remind you, does Inception staircase remind you of?
I always thought that was intentional.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know for sure that it is, but in my heart, that was fully intentional.
Right, so yeah. Just a little tongue-in-cheek.
Or just kind of like, I don't know, it's the ship of dreams.
Yes.
It's the ship of dreams there within dreams.
The ship of dreams thing, if to listen to the music and the sweeping views of the ship and all of the 500 extras who sprained their wrists waving... At the beginning, I feel like Cameron is really obsessed with that idea that this is, you know, this magic thing that everyone saw as life-changing or grand or beautiful. And that's kind of, this is what I was saying in the intro you may or may not have used. That's kind of weird for a disaster movie where everyone dies. There's a little tension there. Maybe that tension's the point, but...
Only half of them die.
More than half of them die.
Oh, sorry. I apologize. Yeah. I thought that was more, like, the thing about this movie is that it's always dancing a little bit around the class stuff that is really obvious.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it doesn't really want to look straight down the barrel of... The rich women and children lived and the poor people died.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the richest person on the boat died.
Yeah.
Right. So I feel like he could have explored that in a way that wouldn't have been so bleak and sank the movie. No pun intended.
Well, like a lot of the richest ones that did die, it was it because they were like, fine, I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
Like, I think most of them made that choice. And
I mean, I think that the men were kind of like, it's our job as men to die.
No, it really was. Brandy. And that's why the one, the snivelly guy, who is a real person, I keep forgetting his name.
Doesn't matter. He's snivelly.
That, you know, he was like smeared in the press for years and kind of went into a depression and had to hide the rest of his life because they were like, fucking Astor and Rockefeller and all these people were like, oh, we're supposed to die now. And you got on a boat, right. You know.
Yeah.
He was canceled.
That's right.
100% of the children in first and second class survived.
Oh, wow.
First and second class. Okay.
Yeah. 97% of the women in first class survived. 87% of the women on the crew survived. That's more than I would have thought. 86% of the women in second class died. Then it jumps.
86% of the women in second class died?
No, I'm sorry, survived.
Okay.
46% of the women in third class survived. Only 34% of the children in third class survived.
Oh, Jesus. Okay, we're going to stop with this now.
Yeah. Well, then
we got to stop talking about this, Sean.
Get to all the men. All the men.
Okay, I guess we can talk about men dying.
32% of the men in first class survived. 21% of the men on the crew. Actually, men in second class was the lowest. Only 14 of the 154 second class men died. So yes, it was sharply divided by class. It was more sharply divided by... They got most of the women and children on the boats.
I have a history question.
Yeah.
The people in third class are presented as, like, deeply poor. Are they?
Yes.
Okay.
From what I know, they were... people immigrating. They saved all of their money and took their money from their friends and scraped together enough to get a ticket. And as it happens, this was a big ship with lots of space that they could get on. It was a little more than if they had done a normal ticket on a normal ship, but not by that much.
Okay.
I always forget to pay attention to this, but where was the Titanic coming from and going to?
They start in Southampton in the UK, and then they go to Cherbourg. I'm not sure I'm saying that right, in France, and then they stop in Ireland.
And then it crosses to New York.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But we start in Southampton.
Okay.
Yeah. And then Molly Brown comes on in Cherbourg.
Also, I thought it was kind of insensitive to show Rose from Jumpstart the computer reenactment of the ship. Like, I feel like a little PTSD.
That's for us. And that's actually, as much as I find that other guy, that Bill Paxton's buddy annoying, that is a really helpful sequence for us to be like, here's what's going to happen.
But I feel like Rose shouldn't have been there for that.
No, I agree.
Thank you for that forensic. I love her.
She is good. I have to say, like, I am glad that Kim Basinger won that Oscar, which other people disagree with. I think it's deserved. Gloria Stewart is really good in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We don't talk enough about the spit payoff. Because
yes!
I love the teaching her to spit scene. I forgot that she gets it right by spitting in Cal's face.
I also think that is the most she's 17 moment in the entire movie. Is her being like, what you do while you're flirting is you learn how to spit.
Yeah. I don't know how many times Billy Zane is going to get spit on. His face going to get spit in and on screen.
A few more,
It happens a lot.
Wait, what other ones?
Oh, definitely Demon Knight. I think it happens in Posse. And there's another one, I'm pretty sure. But
I don't think I've seen either of those movies. I love how much you love Billy Zane.
Yeah, talk about your relationship.
Please talk about Billy Zane.
Well, I think it all started when I saw Dead Calm. And it's just something about his swagger, his ridiculous just smarm. Billy Zane in the hallway. We got Billy Zane. I guess is what it
truly
is.
Truly.
And
that is a man. That is a confident man.
Yes. And I just kind of stuck with me. I even saw The Phantom.
I kind of love The Phantom. Right? The Phantom is a really fun movie.
And this was the time and period when I discovered Billy Zane. It was probably like, it was definitely before Titanic. So like early 90s, I guess. And so this is the time period of going to Blockbuster and trying and find. So I would just like rent any and everything that Billy Zane was in for the longest time. And to this day, like the love, I will watch just about anything with Billy Zane in it. And he's just a really charismatic person, and I do have a square on. We get a square because I did meet Billy Zane.
Yes.
Tell us about it.
It was at a Comic-Con, so it's kind of a cheat. But still.
No, that's not a cheat. That's real. That's real.
It really happened. But I was ecstatic. Like, I was just over the moon. I was, like, super giddy about it. And when I go in to hug him, I accidentally, like, booped his bum. And there's a photo of, like, when your photo turns, when your camera turns the phone, it's like a little GIF. You can see his reaction of, like, whoop. And I was just like.
Amazing.
And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. But he was very. He was very friendly, mm-hmm. very delightful. We chatted for a little bit. I don't remember about what, but totally worth it. Like,
yeah,
Billy
Zane.
He's
so well cast in this.
Mm-hmm. He is.
Like, he's so hot.
Yes.
He is.
And disgusting at the
Even
same
when he,
time.
Like, flips out on her. When he flips the table, I'm like, I'm so conflicted right now.
He's so hot and so rich. That he's only too much of an asshole by like 10%.
Right.
Like, if he were a little less of an asshole, if he were just the guy at dinner, like, you don't understand art, I'm ordering fish for you. Right. I would be like, Rose, go with him. You'll be fine.
Exactly.
He's a little too violent. Yeah. But other than that.
I would say a lot too violent, but I do think that the whole thing of like, I understand why Rose is engaged to him. He's mm-hmm. super charming and attractive and rich.
Yeah, mm-hmm. but that was like I guess the breakdown of it, the baseline of it is that her family needs money.
Yeah.
Like, she's basically getting pimped out
yeah.
by her mom. So they can, I don't know, I guess her father left them with nothing but debt and squalor, mm-hmm. which is a weird, like, it's just kind of a throwaway. Like, if you don't pay, it's like a 2-minute scene.
That's tapping into, like, have you read Jane Austen novels? That's like a trope that they're, like, hitching her ride to, yeah. is my understanding. I don't read.
I bet you know, so I'm going to ask you, because I looked this up, and I'm shocked by it. How old do you think those three, Billy Zane, Leo, and Kate, how old do you think they are in real life making this movie?
I think that Billy is probably 27, 28, Kate, 21, and Leo, 18.
I'm going to just adjust Leo. I think she's about, I think maybe he was, Cal's 30, Billy Zane's 30. I'm going to say Leo's like 24. And yeah, I think Kate's like 20, 21.
Approximating, assuming that most we were filming in 96.
Yeah.
Billy Zane would have been 30.
Okay.
He was born in 66. Leo would have been about 21. And Kate would have been about 20. Leo's okay. the older okay. of the two. That oh. was the shocking thing.
Yeah,
I knew Leo was older than her. I thought he was significantly older than her.
But I'm looking at him, and I think he looks 18.
He's a baby.
And,
oh, yeah.
and she looks 28, 30. And that's complimentary, because women who are 30 are more attractive than women who are 20. She looks fully formed.
She is yeah. so gorgeous. And I mean, she's yeah. so gorgeous, period. But, like, her face in this movie.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so,
I just get lost in it sometimes.
I know. Like, I love it. I don't know. I don't want to say squishy. But it's just, I mean, it's just this perfect, full, voluptuous.
Yes.
I guess. Just this thing about her I just want to, like, kind of grab your face. I just want to smush a little bit.
Yeah.
And also,
she's so beautiful.
And also, Billy Zane's birthday is the day before mine.
Mm. Oh, even better.
It's the most believable thing in the movie is when she takes her clothes off in front of Leo and he forgets how to talk.
Yeah,
right. Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's how that would go.
I love that scene. I love that scene. I love when they cut back to Gloria Stewart talking and everybody's riveted.
I know. And she's like, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, girl. She's like, that's right. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Like, thought I did not.
Anybody want to look at the picture again? It's right over there. You go look.
I also love, like, in relation to that scene when Cal, like, gives a little snide comment to her, like, she's like, no, he couldn't have taken the necklace. I was watching him the whole time. He's like, or maybe have when you're putting your clothes mm-hmm. back on. Thanks, sir.
I did notice, I don't know if it was for the first time this time, but I definitely was relieved to know that she and Cal have already fucked.
Mm. I wasn't sure.
So he says, you're my wife in practice, if not in reality or what, right? So okay. like that means we're fucking. Mm. And also he says, like, I thought you would come to me last night.
Yeah.
Right? It makes me feel better that she had good sex in that car.
Because yes, as attractive and what and rich as Cal is, I can't imagine he'd be a good lay.
Well, right, exactly. But I also think that if she were fucking Leo in that car for and it was her first time having sex, I don't think a car is a good place to have your first sex. So no. I'm glad she got to have good sex.
Especially that tiny, like they were the size of. Yes, I felt old when she pulls him backwards through the thing, and I'd be like, oh, you would have sprained. I know. Every muscle that would have been it for the night.
I felt that in my spine. I was like...
So I've seen that car.
So you went to.
I didn't dredge up memories other than the car, maybe one of the necklaces. I went to. I sent this. I think it's called Titanic, the motion picture, the exhibit,
that
or Titanic
right.
on tour. There was some.
Oh, that was here, right?
No, that there was a thing here a couple of years ago that was artifacts from the actual Titanic, which the information was good. I don't care that this plate was on the like. It's just a kind of old plate. Like I own older shit than that. When I was in Chicago, I bought like a souvenir. You remember how people used to get souvenir spoons? I bought one of those from the Great World's Fair, the 1893 World's Fair. And this is older than the stuff on the Titanic. Anyway, that's not the point. The thing I went to was in 1998.
Oh.
They toured around with props from the movie.
Oh.
Like when the movie was still in
so
theaters.
As a teenager, cool. You went to see props from the movie on tour?
This was mainly, I keep mentioning, my brother was really, really into the movie.
Right.
And there was a tour of like theme parks where they would set up a warehouse full of stuff from the movie.
Huh.
And somehow we found out about it. And because my brother was so into it, we decided to go to King's Dominion Theme Park in Richmond, Virginia. I remember waiting in line for it. I remember there being a lot of stuff in there. I remember the car because the handprint was still on it. The handprint is not the handprint is not actually sweat. Like somehow that's painted on. So it's got to stay. But the handprint's still there. And I think it ended at one of the Heart of the Oceans. I don't really remember much beyond that. But I guess this was the beginning of my love of looking at things that were in movies.
Yeah.
Because I do love that
a
lot. Yeah.
Camila, I got to ask you, in our Scream 2 episode, you mentioned that you saw this movie three times on three different dates.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Please share more.
Okay. This was around the time where I was working at UPS, and UPS is a great place for a young woman to pick up, like working in the warehouse.
UPS guys are hot.
Yeah. It's a great place to pick up dudes. I'm not going to get into specifics because I was actually dating someone like for real.
Okay.
At the time, but then picked up two other strays. And But the one I was trying to break up with at the point in time. So I couldn't let him know that anybody else happening. And then, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I'm not going to mention any names. Like the two out of the three I still talk to, one, I couldn't even tell you his name.
Okay.
I was like, that was the only date.
That's pretty impressive. That's pretty impressive that two out of three you still talk to all these years later.
Let me put it this way. Two out of the three. One out of the two I speak to on a regular basis. The other
Amazing.
One, we are social media buddies and...
Fair enough, but that's still something.
Yeah.
I have a serious plot question, a serious story analysis question.
Mm.
Rose repeatedly having doubts.
About
whether or not she really wants to run off with Jack.
Mm. Yeah.
There's the first time where she's like, we're broken up now.
Right.
I can't talk to you anymore. My mommy said so. And then 20 minutes later, she's just like, fuck it. And then just goes back with almost no motivation. She just gets...
I can tell you what her motivation is.
Yes. With no story motivation. Okay. And then the second time with the fake stolen necklace, where she does look at him for a minute like, are you actually just a crook?
Mm.
And then when she goes back, she's just like, I knew all along. I realized I knew all... No, you didn't. Shut up.
Right.
Is that
tracks with me?
Is that padding, or is this actually her fatal flaw? Is that we need to stretch this shit out and have a middle act, or is that actually the fatal flaw of Rose, which costs Jack his life, if not hers, because she's rich and a woman, and in this very specific instance, that's the best possible thing to be is a rich woman.
Right.
she's not going to die, but because she has this flaw, her lover has to.
I think so. And I think it's 17-year-old, inexperienced, rich girl, like bouncing back and forth. Of course, she's going to feel obligated to do as her mother tells her and to help the family out with the family. She has to marry this guy. She feels like she has to marry him for the money and so her family can survive. But she already knew she didn't want to be with Cal.
That shot of Kate Winslet looking at the little girl being scolded for not sitting up straight and then putting her napkin on her lap. I feel like that's like one of the more meaningful moments of who is Rose DeWitt Bucater, right? Like that was her. Her most of her life has been about becoming this item of consumption for rich men. And that is not, she's a person instead. So I do think it's intentional, and I don't think it's padding, and I think it is storytelling. I also don't think it's fair to blame her for Jack's death. He would have drowned anyway. He was in steerage. He would have drowned.
Well, that's true.
As much as Jack frolicked around that ship, he wasn't going to be. He wouldn't have been down there.
And he could have grabbed it. I have a child. No, he wouldn't have done that.
But no, I think he would have like been on the deck when all this happened, smoking or something.
I do want to acknowledge the whole, was there room for Jack on the door? There is a Mythbusters episode about this.
Is there?
Yes, in which they determine that unless they had figured out some kind of like MacGyvering of using their life vests to give the door extra buoyancy, there is not room for two people on the door.
That's what I was, when I watched it this time, I was like, oh, that's why. It's not about room, it's about weight.
Correct.
Maybe I would have made the door smaller. Like you're making the prop. Yeah. Just make a smaller door so we don't go, that looks awfully big.
Yeah. Right. All right. That's valid.
Yeah.
I also feel like there was a lot of wood and shit floating around in the vicinity that Jack probably could have looked for something better.
I do like the Chekhov's hypothermia when he's trying to convince her not to jump at the beginning. He's like, I experienced hypothermia and it's not great.
Right. Jackals.
I did look into this slightly. For most people, it was neither drowning nor hypothermia. It was basically just like the effects of shock. Water is so cold.
Does that count as hypothermia?
No, because it's faster than that. You would basically have a heart attack or some other thing where your body is just like, nope, done.
Right.
Oh. Yeah. Except for the people who were stuck on the boat. They certainly drowned. It was a sad day, everyone. Mentioning.
That's the thing. It's like, I feel bad about like how excited I am talking about this movie, because like when you do think about this story, it is very, very sad. Yes.
The poor Fabrizio and Guy Irishman.
I gotta say.
What's his name?
Tommy Ryan, I think.
Tommy Ryan.
I gotta say, favorite line reading in the entire movie is, I can already see the Statue of Liberty. Very small, of course.
Perhaps heritage-based. Mine is Tommy. If this is the direction the rats are going, that's good enough for me.
Yes.
That's such good life advice.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I will also say, growing up in a very Italian area, boy, did the girls all have a big old crush on Fabrizio.
I'm sure.
That's cute.
We have been here a long time.
Yeah.
As appropriate. It's Titanic.
I got a thing to say. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Talking about going on dates to see this movie. I saw this movie three times only with girls I didn't date in middle school, but it was a big source of gossip. When did the boy you went on a date with start crying? That was like the thing to talk about in 1998.
I think a big part of the power of this movie, it's a very teenage kind of love, like teenage to 17, 20, you know, just this like infatuation, lust, save my life, hot person of the other sex is such from that time. And I think that that explains why teenage girls and teenage boys, one of the things is like, the teenage boys were not sad that they had to keep seeing this movie, partially because
this movie fucking rules.
It's a good movie and it's very exciting. It's action packed. Plus Kate Winslet, teenage boys kind of had to act tough, but we're seeing it just as frequently as teenage girls. And even people who are a little older in that 18 to 34 demographic still have such fresh memories of feelings like this. It just works.
I wonder if that thunder is going to make it onto Mike.
Mm.
Hopefully also the power stays
right
on.
Yeah. Probably wrap this up.
I will always remember that Tim Schumacher, who I had a crush on earlier but was over it by then, thank goodness, he started crying when the dishes fell. What a sociopath way to start crying during this movie.
I don't know. That one, like...
it's like well after the whole nearer my God to these sequence, and it's kind of like, you're worried about the dishes?
I don't... Something about some of the physical stuff. Like the windows crashing in on the captain.
The windows crashing in on the captain is a big thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta say, the thing that will never make me not cry is the old couple cuddling as the water
they're
around them.
They're based on real people and they're important.
They're also in A Night to Remember.
They're and they were not, that wasn't third class.
No. Yeah, because in A Night to Remember, or actually maybe it's, I can't remember which, this is what happens whenever I try to do extra credit for our show. In one of them, it's like, get on the boat, lady, and she's like, we've been together for this long, we're gonna die together. Yeah. Which, like, respect. Also, while you're looking that up, I do want to say, I do think part of the reason that I am able to love this movie fully is because I believe in love at first sight.
And I
like to say fast love, because I don't really think it's at first sight, but like part of the reason I believe in that is because I had it with Colin. Like, that's, I so knew nice. Right away. And mm-hmm. Colin always like teases me about like, oh, you had lust at first sight, but when we met and we had like an embarrassing meeting story, which I'm not going to tell because we don't have time because mm-hmm. the power might go out.
Mm-hmm.
Colin, when he was telling that embarrassing meeting story to his coworkers, was like, wouldn't it be so funny if I married that girl?
Mm.
Right? I'm like, you said that because you knew.
Yeah.
You knew, Colin.
It's a powerful film.
Yeah.
Here, let me make it sad again. That was okay. Isidore and Ida Strauss. He was a co-owner of Macy's. He was an original co-owner of Macy's and a congressman, a Democratic congressman at the time.
A seated congressperson died on the Titanic?
I don't know if he was seated then or if he was previously. They walked to the lifeboat and she refused to get on.
And then also the Irish mother, who I figured out only upon watching the trailer when Sean sent it to the group chat, is Vasquez from Aliens.
He has his people.
Yep, he has his people.
He likes Sigourney Weaver. He likes Kate. Kate Winslet did not have a good time and said, I'm not working with him again unless there's a lot of money involved.
And cut she to got a lot of money
Avatar
for kissing.
The Way of Water.
I mean, there's, I'm sure a lot that of money was also involved. Like 2 days of work for her. She's barely in that movie.
Yeah. I mean, he was, you know, we should acknowledge he was widely reported to be kind of a tyrant.
Oh,
angry,
sure.
Yelling. He wouldn't let people out of the water. They were, you
and
know.
The water was really cold.
Yeah.
Is the other thing that I remember. And I, like, that has haunted me for years. Every time, like, I remember, you know, watching the, like, HBO special and, like, the actors talking about how cold they were. And for years, every time I saw extended sequences underwater, I would think about how cold the actors must be. And then one of my former students was cast on a mermaid TV show called Sirens. And I, like, posted on her Facebook, like, are you cold all the time? And she's like, no, the water's warm. It's fine.
Oh, they've started correcting
yes,
for that.
Correct.
Let's rate Titanic.
Oh, goodness.
I started at 90. I added 2 points for Old Rose's Chihuahua and 1 point for Billy Zane slipping on the newel post he just shot off of the railing and getting right back up and continuing to shoot. So I'm going to end at 93. Camila?
88.
94.
88 is the restrained number. That's 91 2/3. Good score. Give me a moment to figure out. I think we ruined the speed threshold.
It is better than speed.
And Titanic.
Although I think I gave speed a higher score. Let's be real.
Did you? Let's find out.
I feel
out.
Like speed is still my highest score.
You gave a 95 to Get Out. You gave a 96 to Speed.
That's what
Speed
I'm saying.
Is
yep.
still your highest yep. score. This slots in at it slots in at 4th.
Ooh.
There's big thunder happening.
It'll be so funny if none of that gets on the mic and we just keep talking about it.
Right. Yeah. Fourth overall, Get Out is a 95. Fight Club is 92 and a third. Carrie is also 91 and two thirds, but it gets a higher because I gave it a 98 and Camila gave it a 97. Titanic slotting in for fourth overall film. To the bingo card, I think the one of us met a character.
Yeah.
I'm shocked with all this movie.
I know, right?
I truly kept trying to figure out if they were like talking about springtime, but they're really not.
Or mistaken identity.
No, it really isn't. But regardless, no, nope, we are still slow on this bingo.
Yep.
Can you count Molly Brown dressing him up in a tux as Geek to Beauty?
I thought about that. He's not a geek.
Yeah, he's really not.
I thought about that too. Poor.
He's more of a rapscallion, a scamp.
Also, great costuming again. That suit does not quite fit
him.
Right.
Yeah, it's just close enough.
Excellent costuming.
Yeah. Well, we have been talking for a very long time. Justified. I mean, is there a lightning round that we should be doing of You Can't Handle the Truth?
I have a couple things to talk about.
Go right ahead.
One, I watched Freaky Tales, which is out this weekend. All right, let's talk about it. I was really hoping that one of you watched it. This is a movie that was at Sundance last year. So it clearly there's not a lot of faith in this film. April dump a year after Sundance.
Because it's kind
of
like, it's very unkiltered. Like I couldn't find my footing.
Here's the thing. This is the movie that either or both of them have been writing in their head since they were in middle school.
Oh, too short?
Yes. I kind of love watching those always, you know, and it's so derivative, right? Like if you're ripping off Kill Bill, then you're ripping off a million things, right? Like it reminded me a lot of Go.
Somebody on Letterboxd described it as Pulp Fiction meets Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Yes.
With sprinkles of Warriors.
I've never seen Warriors, and I was like, they're doing the Warriors thing.
But it totally feels like
that. Wait, how fun is it to watch a bunch of Nazis get the shit kicked out of them?
It's very fun. A very fun movie.
I had a great time watching it.
Yeah, it's just weird. Like, there's a, and I don't know if it's on purpose, but it's like a very deliberate and very obvious film change. When we get to, like, the first one looks like it was shot on VHS. We get to Pedro and we're like back into the digital world.
Yeah. Push the window boxing out.
Yeah.
That's one of, like, I am kind of annoying about changing aspect ratios. Mm. I loved that change. No, that was good. Yeah. Ratio.
So it was different. And I appreciate different. It wasn't like the same old bullshit, even though it had, you know, whispers of other things. I think my biggest thing was just like, how much of this story is real?
I wish they leaned in a little bit more to the magical realism side of it, right? Like, as soon as they, in the very beginning, when Too Short is like, that green stuff that was going, I was like, excuse me, what? Yes. So I wish they had put a little bit more towards that direction. Yeah. I feel like this is a movie that could have been great if it got a little bit more finesse.
Yeah.
In the meantime, I really enjoyed it and I recommend it, even though I think it's not good. No, it's good. It's, you know, good. What? It's like, certainly I'm going to bleep that because I was loving that running joke and that paid off so fucking well. Yeah.
So, I mean, I would recommend it. Like,
who even knows if it's going to come into theaters here? It seems like a movie that I will be telling people exists and they won't believe me.
Right.
But watch this. It's good. Or it's extremely enjoyable.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I watched is Number One in the Call Sheet is like a two-part docu-series. Yeah. Highly recommend it, even though it has problems. Yeah. Like the first one with dudes. You wouldn't know that Jonathan Majors existed. And then the second one with chicks, Megan Good is one of the chicks. And it's kind of like, first of all, have you ever been number one on the call sheet? Because I don't think so. And secondly, yikes. The second one is better. The woman one is better. I think women are more interesting than men. The first one is very like, look at us. And the second one is like, look at us. And it feels a little bit more real. Mm. Let's put it that way. Yeah. Anyway, highly recommend it on Apple TV Plus.
Yeah. I watched Mother's Instinct.
What
is
that?
A movie with Anne Hathaway and What's the other one? Jessica Chastain.
Oh, huh. Two Academy Award winners.
Yeah, and I think it's set in like the 50s, 60s. Okay. Two moms, one has a tragedy happen, and it's kind of a little bit of a psychological thriller.
Okay.
And it's good. It's not great, but and it's interesting. It's a nice Saturday afternoon watch. And I saw The Woman in the Yard.
Oh. I keep trying to decide if I should go.
Don't go in as a horror fan. No, don't go in expecting a horror movie.
It's Blumhouse, right?
Yeah, it's not a quote unquote horror movie.
Then why is Blumhouse releasing
it? I don't know.
Okay.
But it is good. Like when you go in, like you remove that aspect of it, then you can know what to expect. Mm. And it's really good.
Danielle Deadwyler, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lot of symbolism. And even like as I was leaving, like it was a lot to unpack, and I don't want to really give too much away because you really should experience it. But when I was leaving, another woman in the audience, like it was like afternoon showing that we went to see. It was like maybe five or six of us in the theater. And as I was leaving, this woman comes up to me. She was like, "Did you understand that?" I was like, "Yeah," and I explained to her what my theories were.
That's nice.
I've been on both sides of that interaction.
This is the in-theater experience.
Yes.
Yeah, but I would recommend that. And I saw Anora, guys.
Oh.
I mean, it's good. I don't know. Like, I didn't see Best Picture.
Yeah,
that's about where Mary Beth was.
Yeah, yeah, I feel like a lot of people are there.
Yeah,
yeah.
I don't see Best Picture at all. Mickey did a great job, although you know I'm very limited in what I know about her. The Scream is the only thing I've seen her.
Okay,
in.
This was the first thing that I meaningfully saw her in, and I was like, "Holy shit!"
I mean, there's some really good moments. A lot of emotion. A lot of I'm happy for everybody who enjoyed it. It wouldn't be on my top 10 for 2025, 2024. So that's it.
If you recall, the last time we recorded, I was heading straight to the theater to see Alto Knights and Snow White in succession. Mm-hmm. Rough day. Rough couple of six hours.
I was like, I need to watch a new movie or I'm going to lose my mind. And I was getting ready to go see Alto Knights at the Freaky Tales Screener Cave. And I was like, never mind.
Alto Knights. What do you, why?
Just so frustrated right now.
He's not playing brothers. He's not playing the same guy at different ages. They're just, instead of casting another person, they were like, do two. He's just, they're not related. There's no connection between them. He's just the two most important characters. He plays both of them.
That's really weird.
Like it's fucking Norbit. Only it's a serious mob movie. And it looks silly. And it makes this theoretically silly mob movie silly. It doesn't help that it's just not very well done. Mm. Constant, like, explaining what the mafia is voiceover. It's just, it's an eighth tier Goodfellas.
Yikes.
That just never comes together and has this bad gimmick. And still a little bit better than Snow White, because this is the last place I could say my best review ever. Hi-ho, it blows. It's just so, and I know I don't want it to, because there's such a terrible, you know, narrative around this movie, and there's so much bullshit around this movie. The problem is just that it's bad.
Yeah.
The new music doesn't mesh with the old songs at all. The dwarves look terrible.
Why did they go that way?
It to avoid making a decision, because you could have either acknowledged that dwarves as funny little woodland characters is problematic and not had them be dwarves, or you could have said fuck it and cast little people. And instead of doing either of those things, they tried to go middle of the road and make them not quite human, so we're not really doing it.
No.
And you made these horrific looking monsters.
Horrific.
They're so uncanny valley that just looking at them, and they don't look like, Dopey looks like the Mad Magazine Alfred E. Newman.
Oh, man.
It's so bad. Do you need to press a button to preserve the recording up to this point in case the power goes out?
No.
Or will it be saved no matter what?
It'll be saved no matter
okay.
what.
Okay.
I'm leaving that in.
Because the lights flicker.
I do want everyone to know that, like, we the also, world is falling down on top of us.
I gotta leave.
All right, let's wrap it up.
Altonite's bad. Snow White, bad. Death of a Unicorn, bad. I had hope for that.
Yeah, that seemed like a movie you would like.
It played it too straight. I either wanted the creature feature, like, 80s-style alligator grizzly, but it's unicorn, or I wanted, like, the witch, like elevated horror it. Instead, it was just kind of a normal movie about magic unicorns. You know, it didn't. Taya Leone was very funny.
I like her.
And Will Poulter was funny, but it didn't come together. I did like Ephes. Maybe you've heard of this. It's like the current buzzing indie micro-budget thing, first-time director, about an old guy's baseball league. And it's their last game. It's in the 90s. It's their last game because the field's being knocked down. But they're not sentimental. They're just kind of pissed off and grumpy. And and it's mostly just the game.
That sounds cool.
Do not leave the field. It's just them being fed up and old and cranky while they play the last baseball game they're ever going to get to play.
Into it.
It's in some theaters right now and coming to streaming soon. Let's draw a movie. So how do you follow up Titanic with The Birdcage? Same era?
Yeah!
Good movie. We're in a hot streak. We're in a hot period.
I don't wear shoes. They make me fall down.
I love this movie so much.
Yeah.
Me too. It's just going to be an hour of us just like saying our favorite lines.
I know, right?
It was just the anniversary, I think.
I think so.
Well, it went to number one in 96, so it's coming up.
It might have been...
I saw Hank Azaria,
we can celebrate the 29th anniversary of this movie. It deserves a yearly celebration.
29th
I fucking love this movie.
To 30th anniversary.
All right.
One of the best comedies of the decade, beyond any doubt.
And we can celebrate the life of Gene Hackman.
Oh, yeah. Shit.
Yes. Also, R.I.P. Val Kilmer
Tony?
While we're here.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, can't wait. That's exciting.
Did you have a Why Tony for Titanic? It's Titanic.
Because I said so.
Yes, yeah. Robin
but also,
said so.
I think Billy Zane is in a new movie.
Is he?
Yeah, two, actually. He's playing Marlon Brando in one movie, and he's in something else, too. He looks like the makeup is great. Like, he looks just like him. I don't know if it'll ever see the light of theaters.
Right. Right.
Yeah. I threw away two waterlogged VHS copies of Titanic yesterday.
What? Oh. Waterlogged?
I was going through some
Spooky.
Shit in my yeah. I was going through some shit in my parents' basement, hit a pater to VHS tapes.
Including two separate copies?
Regular and special edition.
I see, okay.
Both four total VHS
tapes. Right, exactly.
So that, I guess, is the Why Tony. What? Thank you all for going on this doomed
voyage.
Boat ride with us. How odd that then the water came.
Right?
We've been here for too long. We've angered the gods.
Tony's like, get the fuck out. Stop.
Titanic was released December 19th, 1997. What was the number one song in America?
Boyz II Men.
No.
Mariah Carey.
No.
TLC?
No. I'm going to give you a few more and then I'm going to give it away.
Chumbawamba.
Both for time and... frustration.
So not Chumbawamba.
No. Okay. I listened to that song.
I know
yesterday.
You mentioned Chumbawamba. That's exactly. I was like, aha.
The opening clip, you I too. Thought that music mattered, is Pete Postlethwaite in a comedy about a brass band in England being defunded?
Weird.
With Ewan McGregor?
Okay.
You too.
No.
Aaliyah.
Friends, we just fucking did this.
I don't know. What did we just do?
With Scream 2.
Oh.
And
Scream 2, Puff. It was the biggest song of the year because a world leader died.
Oh, Elton John,
Candle in the Wind. Yep, Princess
the whole
died.
Thing.
Still there. Yeah, still dead. People still mourning.
Still dead.
Is there no chance that Princess Diana saw Titanic? No, it would not have.
She would have loved it.
She would have loved it.